Cape Talk, health and wellness.
When we talk about couples struggling to fall pregnant, the conversation often tends to focus on women and their particular fertility challenges and heartaches. Today, though, I want to really flip the conversation over and focus on men's struggle with fertility issues, because studies are increasingly suggesting that male fertility rates are declining and, in fact, have been doing so for some time now. I thought we should take a look at what are the causes of male infertility and why we're seeing this escalation, as well as looking at the role of lifestyle in management of production and quality of sperm, and also taking a look at the question of how significant the impact of alcohol consumption is on male fertility, particularly important in a country like ours, which is known for its excessive drinking culture. There's some of the questions I want to put to our guest today, who is on the line with me now. A great pleasure to welcome back to the show Dr. Paul LaRue, who is a specialist in reproductive medicine and a director at the Cape Fertility Clinic. Lovely to have you with us again, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Pippa. I really appreciate you inviting me on your show again.
How many couples are affected by infertility? Do we have any stats either for global figures or those here in South Africa, Paul?
Yes, we have global figures. About 1 in 8 couples struggle with infertility, and about 40% of those patients will actually find a problem with the male partner. So male infertility is really a significant issue affecting people. Infertility, the rates also increase as a woman gets older, though, because then we have issues with egg quality. So as women get older, we battle more with infertility. And when you get women who are 37 and older, then about 1 in 3 couples start having a problem. And over 40, about half the couples struggle. Mm. So it's important for patients to have children when the woman is still young, and to seek treatment early as well if they're battling. But, okay. You know, I think aside from the woman's age, a significant number of patients do have male factor infertility. So it's something that we do focus on when we meet patients. We have to look at both partners equally and do tests on both of them to make sure that we're understanding all the possible causes.
And I think it's so important to have a conversation like this on a public platform, because we know that male fertility is not spoken about as publicly as much as female fertility is. Do you want to talk a little bit about why that is? Are men just generally more shy to discuss these things, or do you think it's because there's a lack of awareness of the fact that male fertility issues could be a contributor in as much as 40% of the cases?
I think it's historical, really. I think a lot of the time women have taken on the burden of fertility because they carry the baby and deliver the child. So, you know, a lot of the focus ends up being on the woman, which may be incorrect, obviously, when you look at the diagnosis of infertility. So there are many couples where the woman is automatically blamed as being the responsible one when they can't get pregnant. But obviously, when we investigate, we find a high number of couples. It's either a mixture of both of them having problems, or in fact, a problem with the sperm.
Okay.
So I think it's very important not to make any assumptions and do all the proper testing before making any decisions.
Absolutely. Now, before we sort of delve into the variations of male infertility and the causes, let's talk about the fact that there is a reported decline in male fertility levels worldwide. How big a decline is it, and how widely has this been studied?
It's difficult to quantify, but there are quite a lot of papers showing that when you analyze semen analysis in clinics, you're finding, you know, an increase in the incidence of male infertility. And there's also an increase in testicular cancer, which might be mirroring the change in male infertility. So I think there's something going on that's affecting sperm function and possibly also increasing the risk of testicular cancer as well. And, you know, the exact cause is not known. You know, there are many possible things in the environment that could be causing a trigger, you know, in terms of affecting sperm function and damaging the testicle. People have looked at things like estrogens in the water and various types of BPA as a chemical in plastic and so on. So there are various environmental things that could be causing issues, but it's not very clear exactly what it is.
Okay. Now let's delve a little deeper into the forms of male infertility, because it's not a one-size-fits-all diagnosis. For some men, it might be a case of a low sperm count. For others, it might be an issue of the mobility of the sperm that are there. Talk us through some of the more common forms it takes.
Sure. So when you analyze a semen analysis and look at sperm, there are basically three things that you look at. So you look at just the number of sperm in the sample, which is very important, and that's a count per million. So In a normal semen analysis, you've got 15 million sperm per mil, so there's a lot of them.
Yep.
If the sperm count goes below about 10, then it starts becoming much more difficult to get a natural conception. So the sperm count is very important. Other sort of functional aspects of the sperm will be the motility or the movement of the sperm. And, you know, there basically you look at a percentage, you know, how many sperm are moving, and around about 40% or more normally moving. Interestingly, these days in laboratories, they've got fancy computers now that look at the sperm and track all these millions of sperm to get accurate assessment of the sperm rather than just looking at it using a human eye. So we have computer-assisted semen analysis now where computers analyze the sperm and work out how many of the sperm are moving and give us pretty accurate assessment of whether there's really a problem with the movement of the sperm. And the last thing is the shape of the sperm. So some people have got lots of sperm, but the shape is strange. They're not the typical sort of shaped sperm. They've got too many heads or tails or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in those cases, the sperm doesn't function well. So we have to look at all those different parameters in the laboratory to get an idea what's going on.
Okay.
So that's basically, but the basic diagnosis would be the semen analysis first, and then we would look at other things. You know, if the semen analysis is abnormal, then we would also look at hormone functioning in the man and also some genetic testing sometimes to see if he's carrying a genetic disorder, because there's quite a few well-known ones that can actually affect the sperm function.
Okay, thanks for clarifying those causes. Now, as you said, genetic disorders may contribute, hormone function may contribute. We all know, I think, that some specific diseases of childhood can affect sperm production and sperm quality. Mumps is the one I think everybody is worried about. Yeah. Is that still something that needs to be aware of?
Yes, your mumps is a viral illness, and it normally affects your salivary glands, you know, so you get a sort of painful cheeks and everything. But sometimes it actually affects the testicles as well. That's called mumps orchitis. And the testicle swells up, and it's very painful. So normally kids all remember if they've had it. But that can actually damage the cells inside the testicle that make sperm as well. So it is one cause of having decreased sperm. The other thing that's quite important is sexually transmitted infections, like chlamydia, gonorrhea, and so on, because what they do is they block the little tube between the testicle and the penis, basically where the sperm comes through, called the vas deferens. So those infections can block that tube, and that means you've still got sperm within your testicle, but it can't ejaculate out anymore.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Right, lots of questions starting to come through around particular causes and a couple of myths that might need to be bust as well. But before we get there, let's just talk a little bit about lifestyle factors. I mentioned alcohol in the introduction. In fact, alcohol is the reason we're doing this segment, because we read some papers suggesting that very definitely there is a link between alcohol consumption and male fertility. Women, when they're trying to fall pregnant, are told to stop drinking and obviously to stay off alcohol throughout a pregnancy. Should men do the same if they're wanting to start a family?
I think, you know, like everything, if you do things in moderation, you're probably going to be okay. But any excessive use of alcohol or smoking can definitely decrease fertility in both partners. So, you know, once, for a woman, it's important if you're pregnant not to drink at all, basically. So you shouldn't be drinking at all once you get a positive pregnancy test, because alcohol has got a whole lot of effects on the fetus in terms of fetal growth. But in terms of the ability to get pregnant, it's not clear that very small amounts of alcohol will cause a problem. So like, you know, one drink or a day or something like that. But if you start drinking a few units every single day, 3 or 4 units a day, then it is definitely going to decrease your fertility. In males, the sperm is actually quite hardy. So a lot of the studies struggle to make the association with 1 or 2 units of alcohol a day. But if somebody's drinking 4 units a day, then it definitely decreases sperm function. So I think it's about doing things in moderation. And if you try and have a baby, then you should try and be as healthy as possible, you know, quit smoking and keep alcohol, you know, to a fair minimum, you know. And the same with things like coffee and exercise. So don't put on a lot of weight and be overweight and not exercise as well.
Okay, thanks for that. Right, let's get to some of the listener questions which are coming in on the WhatsApp line.
Sure.
Just a reminder, you can phone in as well on 021-446-0567 or send a voice note to 072-567-1567. Basil's wondering whether male infertility issues are seen to have any link across particular race groups or income groups. Is there anything like that? I mean, environmental factors, I guess, would come into play in many of the such situations.
Not really. You know, I think there's no real evidence that there's changes in male infertility between different racial groups or different income groups, actually, you know. So I've never seen any evidence to confirm that. So I don't think it really is related to any particular group. I think it can affect people equally.
Okay, interesting. Okay, one might wonder, for example, if poor nutrition would be a factor, but thanks for that. And then somebody asking whether there is any way to increase sperm count if you have a low one.
Yeah, I think it depends on whether we've got good solid medical evidence for a lot of these things, and it's sometimes quite difficult to prove. There's quite a lot of tests looking at using specific vitamins and antioxidants and so on, and whether it affects sperm parameters. In other words, if you look at a semen analysis and the person's on zinc and multivitamins and everything, then sometimes you do see improvements in the semen analysis, but it doesn't often translate into changes in pregnancy rate. So it's quite difficult sometimes to look at the scientific papers, and work out whether it's just changes in sort of laboratory parameters or whether it really affects pregnancy rates themselves.
Okay. Next question on the WhatsApp is from somebody who says, I used a cortisone cream on my son's scrotum when he was a baby because he had eczema. Could this affect his fertility at any stage?
No, I don't think so at all. Yeah, a use of cortisone won't do anything to the semen analysis. The only steroid that causes a problem with sperm is testosterone. And this is quite a problem in people who, going to gym and trying to build big muscles and injecting testosterone. Because testosterone switches off the hormone in your brain, in your pituitary gland, that produces sperm. So if you inject testosterone, you will automatically switch off your sperm production. So a lot of men that are using anabolic steroids will obviously struggle to have a baby. But the good news is if they stop it, it will reverse. It takes about 3 months for new sperm to be formed. So if you stop injecting the testosterone, then the sperm function should return to normal after about three to 4 months.
Okay, thanks. Here's a really interesting one. Somebody calling in. I'm glad you raised this issue. What about the impact of cell phones and microwaves and electronic waves of all kinds? Particularly people worry about the cell phone in a man's pocket. Has that been shown to have any effect on fertility?
No, not definitely. I think the concern about the testicle is that sperm is made optimally at a slightly lower temperature than normal body temperature. So your normal body temperature is at 37. And the reason that the testicles hang down a little bit is to remove them from the body so the temperature is a little bit lower.
Oh.
Because sperm is made optimally at a slightly lower temperature. So if you wear like very tight underwear where you push the testicles back against the body, then you increase the temperature again, which is not optimal for sperm production. If you've got any other hot thing like a laptop or cell phone around you, then I guess it can also increase the temperature around the testicle. So that's a concern about whether it will really affect sperm function. But, again, these things are not really proven. They're more like theoretical concerns, and there's no real medical evidence for any of these things.
Okay, thank you. Well, you've just answered the next question about the tight underwear for us. Thank you.
Sure.
So let's move on to the cycling, another mythbuster. A cyclist whose tackle is constantly subjected to pressure and squeezing, says the WhatsApp. Any impact on fertility?
Yeah, it's been shown, that people that cycle a lot, on a professional sort of level, when they're on a bike for 3 or 4 hours a day, it can decrease their sperm parameters. So there is actually a bit of evidence for cycling causing a problem. If you're cycling a short duration, I'd say less than 3 hours a day, then it's very unlikely that it's going to do anything to you. So it's a bit of duration as well, how long you're on the bike. But there is some evidence. You have people who've done studies in sports, sportsmen and on bicycles where they showed changes in sperm function.
Well, I can just hear the sound of women rushing to their keyboards to cut that piece and play it for their cycling husbands at home. Good luck to you. Okay.
Yeah.
We've got a question that's come in as a voice note. Let's take a listen.
How's it, Pippa and team? I do think it all comes down to lifestyle and diet, man. If you eat rubbish all the time, your body's going to perform like rubbish. Have a great afternoon, everybody. Great show, Pippa.
Thank you so much. Right, diet. We haven't really spoken at length about nutrition, Paul. Any studies linking poor nutrition with poor fertility?
No, not really. I think people have looked at vitamins and so on, and whether that affects sperm function. The one group is if people are very overweight, and diabetic, then it decreases sperm function. So I think if you overeat and you become very obese and so on, then you can get a change in sperm function. In terms of undernutrition, it's not as well shown, you know, that it really makes any difference. Fertility is quite resilient, and people don't often realize this. I mean, even when there have been studies done in wartime and so on, where you think that fertility should decrease because people are starved because of sieges and rationing and all this kind of thing. A lot of the time, the fertility rate is actually fairly unchanged, surprisingly. So it's a bit of a surprising find, but it seems like, you know, the human drive to procreate is still quite strong and can overcome quite a lot of hurdles.
That's fascinating. Paul, for the final question before we run out of time, we haven't spoken about treatment options, and I really would like to leave listeners with a realization that in many cases there are options, both surgical and non-surgical, for intervention when there is a problem with sperm. Won't you just briefly chat through what some of those are?
Yes, I think the bottom line is that we can help most patients who've got male factor infertility, and some treatments are quite simple, called insemination, where we prepare sperm and insert it in the wife when she's ovulating, which is actually a fairly simple treatment to do, and this can overcome a very mild problem. If there's a serious problem with sperm, then we do the in vitro fertilization procedure, where we extract eggs from the woman during a fertility procedure, and we can use really a single sperm to inject into the into each egg to fertilize it. So this has revolutionized the problem of male infertility, because there's hardly any causes where we can't succeed with IVF treatment in terms of making the couple, getting the couple to have a baby. There are some situations where there's no sperm being ejaculated at all, and we do an operation on the testicle called a testicular biopsy. Take a tiny piece of tissue out of the testicle and actually extract the tiny sperm cells from that and inject them individually into eggs. So we have many mechanisms these days of dealing with even the most severe forms of male infertility. And the last option, if there was really a serious problem in the testicle and no sperm being produced even within the testicle, then we still have the option of donor sperm insemination, which would be our final option.
And on that hopeful note, we say thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Dr. Paul LaRue, great to have you on the show.